Good afternoon and welcome to the session titled Resilience in the Return to Work Context. My name is Jason and I'll be the chair for this session. I'm going to give a very brief introduction and then let Fred run with it. Fred Cecchini is a registered psychologist with over a decade of experience in vocational, employment and return to work solutions. Fred has a demonstrated passion for organisational transformation and has led key projects in early intervention, performance enhancement, organisational wellbeing, outplacement and succession planning. Please welcome Fred.
Good afternoon, everybody. How are we? You know those presentations where no one sits in the front because they're scared that the presenter could pick on them? This is the presentation where it would have happened. So we're going to get all the new people to come and sit at the front. Don't be shy. Guys, my name's Fred Cecchini. I work for a company called Injury Treatment. We work within schemes in New South Wales, the ACT, Queensland and the Comcare jurisdiction. Today I'm presenting as a registered psychologist that's passionate about return to work, and we're going to talk about perhaps one of the most intangible concepts to a very concrete thinking group of people. So you're going to have to bear with me. The other thing is I like to walk around, but they've just nailed me to this microphone and said it's being recorded. I'm Italian. I think it's a little racially insensitive. You know, any form of I'm telling you, it's how they got Al Capone back in the day. Guys, what we're going to talk about today is the concept of resilience. And what we're going to do is we're going to take about 13 years of my study. We're going to condense it down into about 30 minutes. So we're going to take the complex and we're going to try to make it simple. And then for you, we're going to try to make the simple compelling. If I do that at the end, you'll give me a round of applause or something fantastic. You'll tell your friends. So what we're going to cover today is psychological injury, and I believe some work's been done on that earlier in the conference, and I'm really grateful for that because it sets a platform that's important for you guys to get your head around. Individual resilience, organisational resilience and risk, and then an early intervention or claims approach using resilience. So I just want to start, because I know that you guys have been in this, you know, terrible venue. It's conferences here. It's like a coal mine, isn't it? You know, that pool out there I wouldn't have left. But what I want to do is just give you guys a bit of a living example of what a psychologist sees when they see psychological injury or mental health issues. So I want this row here, just this third row from the, fourth row from the front, just to stand up for me. That's all. It's about seven or eight people. Stand up. There you go. Lovely. Come and sit down if you're at the back. Don't be shy. Lovely. There you go. Now, we might actually need to get the row in front of them to stand up for me as well. There you go. Just because the lovely lady that just walked in sat down and made herself comfortable. Now, if we look at the representation of mental health issues in society, it's about one in five adults. So I reckon if we pick these two rows and we said they were a representative sample of the people with mental health in society, what we would be looking at is a representative sample. I'm going to get you guys to do me a task. You're not going to sit down. I'm going to give you a word, okay? Now, because in the interest of time, I need you to follow my instructions really, really closely. I need you to yell the word out until I ask you to stop by doing this. And the word is simply stop. So what we're going to do is I'm going to start. I'll give you a signal that says like that. And you're going to yell out the word stop. When I say yell, don't do the whole, stop, you know. I want like you're in an Italian wedding and you don't like the DJ. I want to hear stop, okay? And it's going to repeat until I do this, okay? So we're going to try one, two, but before I do it, don't let me down, okay? So we're going to have one, two, three.
Stop, 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 stop.
Okay, stay there. There's always one, just go there. That's about a 6 out of 10, you're going to have to do better for me. Now, if we're talking about the prevalence of mental illness in society, we've got to talk about those people that experience mental illness, but those people that support them. So generally in society, an average family unit's about 2.2 people. Can I get the next two rows to stand up for me, please? Anybody at the back, just come to the front. Don't worry about what's going on. We're not changing rooms or moving furniture, I promise. If you're at the back, come to the front. Take a seat. There's plenty of seats up here, don't worry. Don't make eye contact, though. I do pick on you. Ask these guys. For the two rows that have just stood up, you represent the family of people that are experiencing these sorts of issues. And I want you to use, these are your words, go away. Not to the people, we're talking to the problem. Okay? So, same deal. I'm going to give you the sign. You're going to say the words at the top of your voice. What I really want to do is to scare the living daylights out of the guys next door. Because that's where you all came here because there's a bit of a hangover and you wanted a soft session. They're really serious. Let's scare them, okay? So these two rows at the back, it's going to be go away. On three. One, two, three.
Go away! Go away! Go away! Go away!
Okay. That's very good. See me after, we'll get your meds fixed. Anyway. Now, what I want to do is I want to put this together because this is what psychological injury looks like in the schemes that we're administrating. At the count of three, we're going to get the first group to say their word stop and the second group to say their words go away. We're going to do it all together. Don't let the other group interrupt you. Nice and loud for me so everybody else gets a sense of what's going on. One, two, three.
Stop!
Okay. Now, just for these couple of people at the front. We got there, see? I'm just going to have... Stand up for me really quickly. Just a quick question. Turn around and have a look at them. What do you reckon you can build into the scheme to manage that much raw emotion? It's a rhetorical question. Sit down for me. But really, that's what we're dealing with. When we talk about psychological injury, and thank you for putting up with me with that, that's what we kind of do here. Really, it boils down to the fact that the difference between mental health and psychological injury is psychological injury is when our normal coping strategies are overwhelmed. That's why it can happen in the work context and other contexts. Just come to the front, guys. Don't stand up at the back. If we look at the concept of psychological overwhelm, and you guys all, they said to me, get a few stats and a few numbers in there. They're all actually, oh, yeah, fair enough. We talk about 1 in 5 people in society experiencing mental health issues. And the issue is, well, why does that matter? The schemes, the reality is when the 8 hours a day of your life is spent at work, whether work triggers an episode of psychological illness or mental health, it's not really about the trigger, it's about the venue. So the potential for work to be the venue where this happens and for schemes to have to manage the trigger are quite statistically probable. And this is what we do all day, every day. But let's look at depression, because what I find really amazing is we talk about just under 7% of Australian employees, if you want these stats, go to Beyond Blue, suffer from a diagnosable clinical level of depression each year. It's a big, bad stat. What I find remarkable in terms of the concept of injury management schemes is that 65% of these employees don't disclose, they don't seek treatment, but they do become involved in complicated IR issues, complicated performance issues, and ultimately they have attendance issues and they lead to claims. What we do know is the research suggests that those people, when they're involved in a claim, will be on a claim for longer, and those claims are typically more costly. I believe it was in the stress presentation we talked about the fact that in all schemes at the moment we're seeing a trend where psychological claims are increasing, the cost and durations of those claims are longer. So I find it really remarkable when we talk about injury management schemes that are designed to look at things like a broken leg, which you can x-ray and get a prognosis and a diagnosis on, how do schemes cope with stuff that you can't see. And there's a lot of scepticism about psychological injury in the schemes because you can't see it. And unfortunately, just a show of hands, who believes the percentage of psychological injury is hijacked in the schemes? Who believes it's not actually psychological injury? It could be masking a performance issue. Show of hands. Don't be scared. I won't pick on you on this one. Okay. Show of hands who believes that it could be something that's not work-related, but work was the trigger point. So 85% of someone's issue could be outside of work, and the one thing that happens on the work day is what they use to trigger a claim. Show of hands if you'd have that opinion. Fair enough. Good. You're a good group. You're a good group. When we do the hokey-pokey later, you're going to love it. Okay. So given that we're talking about a group of people that understand the idea of a formula, it starts with stuff. I hate to tell you, it's not the S word I wanted to use, but I cleaned it up for you. Everybody in this room has stuff. Stuff is neither good nor bad, positive or negative. Stuff is just stuff. Anybody wake up this morning and have to contemplate what they'd have for breakfast at the breakfast bar? That's stuff. Anybody have to call their kids because they've been away for a couple of days? That's stuff. Anybody kind of dread calling the kids because they've been away for... That's your stuff. It's okay. Stuff is the stuff that we're here to talk about. It's the, and ignore that little symbol. Stuff is the basis of what we talk about when we talk about resilience. And there is a hypothesis I have. If you notice on my first slide, there's a disclaimer. No one endorses my views but myself. But the first hypothesis we have about stuff is that stuff is normative. And stuff, the cumulative effect of stuff, stuff to the power of itself. You like that? I did that for you. multiplied by an individual's psychological resources, when those resources are sufficient, mean that the individual is okay. Show of hands if you feel okay today. Some of you are lying. Okay. There is an alternate hypothesis that stuff can become a risk. Stuff to the power of itself, the cumulative effect of stuff, times a diminished psychological resource means that someone is not okay. Okay people generally don't cause too many dramas in schemes. Not okay people are the people that we're talking about. Now, I've devoted my life to mental health issues. I believe that, for me, people are the most fascinating things in the world, and I have literally, despite the humour that I put into it, I'm absolutely devoted to making people's lives better. What got me into psychology is not what happens when people are not okay. It's what happens to people when 10 people will go through a circumstance that would make them not okay, but one of them is. One of them bucks the trend. I think we refer to it as an outlier. One of them uses adversity and becomes better for it, and that's what we talk about when we talk about resilience. So resilience boils down to the capacity of an individual to take a challenge and apply their psychological resources and get a better outcome because of the presence of the challenge. So it's not just that they fix a problem, it's that they use the problem to get a better outcome for themselves or the situation than if the problem hadn't have existed. So the way I like to think of it mathematically is fixing a problem is 3 plus 3 equals 6. Resilience would say 3 times 3 equals 9. It's an exponentially better result because the individual says adversity is opportunity. And resilience is a balancing act. Has anybody heard the phrase resilience before? Show of hands if you've heard it in the psychological context. Keep your hand up if you think, I'm pretty resilient. It's a bit hard on an afternoon after a 3-day conference and I heard about the dinner on the first day. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you, because I believe in value in presentation, I'm going to give you 10 ways and a challenge for each of you to build individual resilience. This is for you. You can build it in a formula. If there's anybody clever enough to come up with a formula for this for me, we'll write the book, make Oprah money. I'm telling you right now. Okay? Don't record that. But what I'd ask you to do, this is a very brief exercise, and I just want you to pick one of these 10 things. When you leave the room today, if you get nothing else out of this presentation, is to say there is one thing that I will think about from that list and I'll work on as a personal challenge and goal. And they're not complex. The first is to maintain good relationships with close family and friends and supportive others. I am Italian. Family means very different things to me. I have relatives we never speak to. I have people we call uncle and auntie that are not blood relatives. And I'm telling you, when we get together for a family function, there's about 75 of us and I don't know whose kids are who. Family means a lot to us. Those supportive relationships don't have to be about the family that we're born into, it's about the family that we create. Because supportive relationships, and again, this is what separates people that are resilient from people that aren't, that 1 in 10 that don't have the typical or the atypical response. 2, active cognitive framing of crisis. They avoid framing an event as a crisis or catastrophic. Does anybody work with someone, and they're probably not in the room, so we can talk about it, that they've got a $5 issue and they walk in and they need $50 worth of attention for it? Oh my God, look at me, look what's happening, it's the worst thing in the world, I can't believe it, the numbers don't balance, oh, what are we going to do? Anybody? Anyone? A few of you do? You guys work together? Don't point at each other, it's not fair. A resilient individual understands that a crisis is what it is. It's a momentary issue to deal with. Those that are less resilient will get stuck on this stuff. Accept circumstances that cannot be changed. I would love to have been 6'7" and looked like Brad Pitt. It would have been fair. I know, you're saying, hey, don't be so hard on yourself, Rick. But some things cannot change. Develop realistic goals and move towards them. Goal attainment is very, very consistent with psychological health. Goal attainment is very consistent with a good return to work. Low cost, low durations is about goal attainment. Take decisive action in adverse situations and remain flexible. Doing nothing is not resilient. Doing something, even if it is wrong, generally is a much more mobilising thing for the human condition. And surprisingly, resilient people are very rarely paralysed. So again, you're picking one of these things and you think, I'm going to do some work on that. Looking for an opportunity for self-discovery after a struggle with loss. I saw people, the New South Wales have had bushfires recently. It's probably the scariest thing I've seen for a little while. Seems to happen each year. And I saw a story about one guy that had burnt down his house, but he was chopping up the firewood because he really liked the look of it. And he was actually a sculptor, and he sculpted out of timber. And he was taking the ashes of his life and turning it into art. I just found that was the most remarkable thing from a psychological perspective ever. I'd be kicking it across the lawn, complaining, you know, that sort of thing. Actively work to build skills and self-confidence. This is about the professional development plans you have in place and the personal development plans you have in place. Maintain a long-term perspective and consider stressors in a broader context. So it's the opposite of the above. It's to say when things happen, there is a bigger picture at play. Not to get caught in the micro detail. Maintain hope and expect good things. Show of hands if you expect good things. Oh, not enough hands. You people deserve the best. Why didn't you put your hand up? Why are you any less deserving than the people that put up their hands? Come on, show of hands if you expect good things. Still some people not putting their hands up. Oh my God. Okay. Maintain balance in life and pay attention to relaxation, body and mind. So pick one thing. You can understand that this is a formula is fairly simple. There's nothing complex in there, but the complexity of actually living this stuff is quite out there. People often say to me, Fred, do you do all of these things? And I say, look at the last one and tell me you're not being insensitive when you say that. From my perspective, that's not funny. From my perspective, what we're talking about there is a formula that is very elegant in its simplicity but hard to follow through. We cannot rely on individual resilience, although, like any muscle, you can work on it. So again, this is going to be a change of pace. Let's talk about the organisation. If we can't rely on the individual, we can rely on the organisation. Why do organisations need to care about resilience in their context? Is because there is risk in every aspect of the employer life cycle, not just injury. They can bring the wrong people in with the wrong attitude. There's a turnover issue. There's a morale issue. There's a cultural issue. You guys have all seen it. We've all worked in places where somebody loses their mind and all of a sudden it impacts on everybody else's joy. This is why we need to look at more systemic stuff. And I'm often asked, when we're talking about the concept of an injury management scheme, why do we not look at beyond the individual? And it's the reality for me is that the organisation is probably the most critical piece. Much like individuals, organisational resilience is about taking a problem and making a better outcome in the face of the problem. Okay? Has anybody seen the movie about Steve Jobs? Show of hands. Oh, you've got to get on to it. Don't let Ashton Kutcher put you off. I know that's the concern for me too. But really what we're talking about in regards to that movie is a man that said, we have a problem. Our dilemma is that we are literally going to go out of business. What we will do is, and I saw some evidence of this recently, is we will find out what the consumer needs before the consumer needs it. We will take this problem of our business sustainability and we'll turn it into innovation that will propel us beyond our competitors. And did he do it? Show of hands if you own an Apple device in this room. Geez, a half a world away. You know? I showed my mum how to use an iPad for the first time on the weekend. My mother had the same video recorder for 20 years, never worked out how to press play and record. I kid you not. I said to her, press the only button you can see. She pressed it. I said, what does it tell you to do? She says, slide here. So she did. And all of a sudden, I said, what do you want to do now? She said, I want to play solitaire. I put solitaire on it for her. So she started to play, flicking cards all over the place. I thought, this is a miracle. That guy must be really proud. That's organisational resilience. It's changing the landscape of opportunity based on challenges. So in an injury management perspective, we're talking about people, and this is the formula that I would be looking at. This is the sort of thing, don't rate your own organisations, but if you have any understanding of organisations that may have failed from time to time in terms of managing risk or managing people, look at some of these things. Access to resources, they've got to be predictable and reliable. It's just that simple. People need to know that they can do what they've got to do. Access to supportive relationships, a forum for relationships with significant others. Is anybody just in the summary of the WorkSafe Victoria? Show of hands if you were just in that. They showed a video about a guy returning to work, and the bit that I was stunned by was he'd returned to work for the first day, and as he got home, a mate from work had dropped him off. That's what that's talking about. That's how you mobilise that, a culture where you would do those sorts of things. Development of a desirable personal identity. If I've heard 15 times today, are you in a red PwC polo shirt? All right, show of hands if you've got a red PwC polo shirt on. There's a desirable identity for you. And isn't PwC clever putting them in a red shirt so we can all see it? But realistically, you can say I work for a company that has a brand that's recognised, or I can work for Fred Cecchini's accounting down the road and kind of come in and come out. There is a difference. Brand identity is critical. Experience of influence, this is where it starts to get a bit murky. The ability for companies to put structures into place that allow people, what's that, 5 or 10?
20,
thank you. It's all right, I haven't finished messing with them yet. Okay. The experience of influence is the capacity for people to say, I can contribute in some small way to the way our company operates. I have had somebody say to me, it was a CEO of an organisation say to me, you're insane. I think I'd know. Because if we got everybody to tell us how to run the business, we'd never run the business. And I said, well, they don't necessarily need to tell you how to run the business, but do you know what they want to do on a Friday after work for fun? No, what do I care? Uh-huh. Maybe you should, and maybe they should have some influence. It doesn't have to be the big stuff, it's the small stuff. And structurally, what we're talking about here is we're talking about the resources of an organisation, their spend, their return on investment. That is critical, that can be measured. Secondly, we're talking about their culture, we're talking about their human resource systems, they're talking about policy and procedure and buddy systems, those sorts of things, that can be measured. Thirdly, we're talking about their brand equity. That is measured. You guys would know how to measure that better than me. There's a formula for it. It says Coca-Cola's worth $72 trillion. I get that. I believe that. Third is their experience of influence. That's about employee engagement. There are structures and systems organisations can put into place that can be measured. How often do we do a cultural survey? How often do we do a climate survey? How often do we ask for 360 feedback on our managers? I manage 130 people. I don't want their feedback. I'm telling you now. Can you imagine? Like working for me? Adherence to culture is an interesting one. How do we measure culture? Do you have one? Is it visible? Is what you put on the walls consistent with what your staff do? My wife works for a law firm. One of their values is well-being. I think it's fantastic. And the 18-hour days that she works, I think it's remarkable. I'm not complaining. I'm not going to lie. I kind of love it. She said a few times, maybe we should go somewhere else. I said, stay there. It's good. Experience of social justice. This is really interesting. I had somebody come to us recently in our own business and say, we want to do Dogtober. I said, that's fine, what does that mean? And she said, we help support animals. We raise Labradors that help people that have got disability and special needs, and I raise them from puppies. Can I do some fundraising? I said, yeah. She said, do you mind if I bring the dog in? I said, absolutely, that's fantastic. I can tell you that that Labrador in the office for an hour changed the mood for about 80 people. Didn't, was very well behaved. There's no horror stories. But it was the idea that we were linked to bigger stuff. I mean, we're called injury treatment. What we do is very meaningful. We get people back to work. That's critical. But the social justice aspect of a firm that doesn't have that direct one-to-one or human interaction doesn't mean you don't have it. It just means you've got to find a way to channel it. I don't know if there's anybody here from NAB, but they were really smart in putting ads up that said, we give our staff time to do volunteer work each year. Did anybody see those ads? Fantastic ads. Okay. Last is an experience and sense of cohesion with others. This is also something that can be measured in terms of team morale, staff engagement again, and this can be measured in real terms in terms of things like, dare I say it in this context, but what's your injury rate for things like bullying and harassment? I had a fantastic discussion with an insurer in New South Wales this week, and it came up the fact that 78% roughly of recent site claims had declinature on them. And they said, we're doing all right with that stuff. And my thought was straight away, because I'm a psychologist, is what that'll prove to people is there's a way to get it done and a way to not get it done. If I was administering this scheme and looking at long-term risk, I would look at educated consumers. And next year, some bullying and harassment law comes in. Everybody know about that? It's fantastic stuff. Put some money together, you might need to bail me out after presentations like this. But there's some serious stuff happening in an IR perspective that says things like bullying and harassment are very much top of mind. A resilient organisation knows that's coming. So if I just go back to that slide, this experience of social cohesion is the fabric that holds people together. So again, you guys have got great minds. Just show of hands if you're an actuary in the room. Okay. So if you thought that you could get measures on each of those, and you could put those on a spectrum of 1 to 5, 1 being low, 5 being high, And everything at the high end, that engagement end of the spectrum, meant that risk was reduced. Would you use those measures? Just yes or no, yell it out.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you imagine that there are organisations that are in schemes currently being insured that maybe don't? What advice would you give them? Just yell it out. There you go. Start. Do it. Just do it. I think that slogan's been taken, but we you know, I don't run, so it's not a problem. Okay. When we talk about delivering on these sorts of things, this boils down to a human equation as well, and I'm sorry about that. I'm a bit humanistic. I am a psychologist. You're going to get a bit of that. But if it was to be delivered, who's going to deliver it? Yell out who delivers this stuff in an organisation. It might be in your organisation. Yell it out. Who else? The CEO, yeah.
Just everyone.
Just everyone. Thank you very much. If we rely on HR, all we're going to do is get these warm and fuzzy... Is there any HR people in the room? Just saying. These warm and fuzzy conversations with some incense burning in the corner and they're talking about how much we really care about you and all those sorts of things. People go, why am I talking to HR for? If we rely on the CEO, literally, I'm not far off a CEO's role. Picture me interfering in your day every day. It's as bad as you'd imagine. I'd be tinkering with stuff, moving your chair, hiding your pens. It's not going to help. Realistically, the tipping point in terms of organisational engagement is simply leadership. And there are ways that we can measure technical leaders in terms of their ability to foster resilience. And again, just show of hands if you're a manager in the room. Good stuff. Here's another takeout for you guys. There are five measures. Don't look at the floor by the time you get to the last one. Pick one and say, you know what, from a leadership perspective, I'll do better. Self-awareness, the ability to recognise and understand moods, emotions and drivers as well as their effects on others. I often say to people, as volatile as I might be, at least I know what's going on. And they all laugh because they're other psychologists and then they talk to me about their feelings and I stop listening. They're not the paying customer, it's okay. Self-regulation. It's not enough to understand, it's about controlling what comes through. It's about being able to direct it and being able to use those things because we all have strengths as leaders. Some of us need to think about what our strengths are and we need to apply a thing called judgment in terms of how we manage people. Again, think about this in terms of how you might weaponise this if you were talking to a company about what they might do to build resilience and how you might measure it because you guys are experts at measurement. Motivation. The amount of times I have to say it, if you don't like your job, you're not really going to build resilience in your team. I know it sucks, it's hard, it's terrible because you need the money. They pay you really well. But people will pick up on it, they know. Empathy. I work with a cohort of very technical managers. And this is not a joke. And at this point in the presentation, one put up his hand and he said, can we delegate the empathy? Probably not. Sadly not. Doesn't mean you can't practice, though. And you can fake empathy if you need to. Sorry about that, guys. And social skills. Again, where we have very technical people that have been promoted into management, there is no manual that says, here's how you walk through the office, slapping backs, kissing babies, asking about the weekend, giving them the sports scores. Doesn't happen that way. So what we actually have to do is we have to foster a sense of proficiency in relationships. And often in organisations, particularly technical organisations, it's not unusual for the best technician that's been there the longest to become the manager. So let's bring this back to the idea of resilience. Actually, I just need to see if this will work on... How much time have we got?
Probably about
11 minutes. I can work with 11 minutes. Let me see if this works. The mouse will do what it's got to do. There you go. Now, people have asked if this is me in the film. I find that offensive. Okay. This is an example of what happens in an injury context where resilience fails. I will say to you, because some people do get concerned about this stuff, this is a staged video. It's not real. But it could be. Let's just see if it plays through. No. They were having some problems with this earlier. And I won't go through. What we miss is a manager speaking to a staff member that smashes her laptop. Smashes his laptop. Sorry about that, you didn't miss too much. I'll entertain you in other ways. Okay. What we talk about in the risk perspective and why organisations have to manage resilience is the idea that when we have a trigger point, so psychologists talk about triggers, that's the event where your psychological resources become overwhelmed. When you have a trigger point, we can see commonality. It's the perception of a stressor where people have a reduction in perceived control, they perceive a threat, it's unpredictable or it's novel. So if you think about walking through, we go for a walk on Main Beach and a tiger jumps out at you. You know, one of the ones from SeaWorld finally broke out of the cage, decided to eat a few schoolies, and you just happen to be walking along. Thank you. Would you see that as a would you see that as a stressor? Show of hands if you think that that tiger jumping out at you would be a stressor. Does it meet all these requirements? Okay. It does. It's a novel. Who thought there'd be a tiger on Main Beach? I mean, a few white leather shoes and leather belts, but no tigers. But the critical aspect of that is that what primes us for that trigger? So it's our life situation. Go back to the hypothesis on stuff. It's our work stressors or our work environment, and it's ourselves. When we do work with people about managing resilience and building resilience, the work we do with employees is to say there's a personal accountability here. If your stuff is mounting, use the resources at hand to bring it down. If your stuff is mounting and you don't know how to bring it down, use the resources at hand to add in more coping strategies. Because remember, stuff is cumulative, but coping strategies balance it out, yeah? So think about resilience in an organisational context and what we can do from a risk management perspective. I won't go through the slide, but the individual's responsibilities, the organisation's responsibilities and the leadership responsibilities line up. So if you guys as actuaries wanted to take one of these slides and you wanted to play with it and say there is a formula for where we get optimum resilience in an organisational context, that's the slide I'd use. What are the measures? What are the metrics? And anybody wants to, or leave cards, come and talk to me about it because I reckon we can do it. Then it won't work and we'll be really annoyed. But if we take all of those obligations, and this is where it comes down to scheme management, liability reduction, cost reduction, claim reduction, and right-sizing the scheme, we can apply all of those things where something goes wrong. So the first is when somebody has an injury. Let's just say that that tiger situation comes up. You guys are here for work at the moment, so that would be potentially compensable, depending on the time of the day, the requirement to walk, you know. Can you imagine? I'd love to get that one. Was attacked by a tiger. You're kidding. No, absolutely happened. Who's got liability? Some guy called Siegfried and another guy called Roy. Okay, fair enough. It's an American joke, so it doesn't play real well. I don't know who trains tigers in Australia. I'm doing what I can. So the first is the presenting issue. What is real and what isn't? I got attacked by a tiger. Nobody loves me. Part of that's real. Part of it's not. And often, and I know it sounds like a ridiculous environment, but part of that is the idea that people have this perception. This will be my last slide. I know that's the 5-minute warning. The second is blind spots. What's going on? What data do we analyse that allows us to add a richness into that? The tiger was toothless. It was about 150 years old. It didn't attack you. It stumbled out of a tree and it had a heart attack. Leverage. What is it about themselves, their approach to the world, their worldview, that allows them to overcome the adversity or to look at a fantastic way of dealing it? All of a sudden they walk in and say, I know the tiger attacked me, but do you like my new jacket? The stripes really make my eyes pop. That's a resilient response. Thank you very much for that. Second is the analysis of the risk in the context of a return to work. How are they viewing their outcomes, their identity, the social justice and their empowerment? Again, this comes back to how an organisation builds resilience. The better the organisation does, the easier 2.A is to leverage, the quicker they will get back to work. Secondly, the objectives, the change agenda, how smart and directive are the goals? I can return to work, I can't be anywhere near anything feline. Fair enough. We'll get some graduated return to work duties where you don't walk past any cats. We get all the animals out of the cage. Those sorts of things happen. Thirdly, their commitment. This is, again, that social cohesion. Their mates want them back at work. Tuesday's the day that we have pies in the canteen. I want to be back at work. These are the things that we leverage from a resilience perspective. 2 minutes and I'm good to go. And then we mediate the risk. We need this stuff to get a very practical, practice return to work outcome. That's what resilience does. It makes return to work faster from a psychological injury and easier. I could have gone through that for another 20 minutes, but I'll move on very quickly in the benefit of time, just in case there are questions. Firstly, resilience may mediate risk. Resilience can be enhanced and practiced. Resilience happens. Risk happens. Resilience in risk response creates opportunity. Organisational resilience is multidimensional and resolution focused. Resilience is contingent on resilience in leadership. The risks associated with injury management can be managed through a resilience building framework. That's it from me. You've been really, really good in the time that we've had. Any questions before I let you go? So you're sitting there going, how do I get this? Because you're sitting there going, I can do that formula. He said I can't do it, but I can do that formula. I've worked out how to do it. I don't need a calculator and an iPad. No, we'll do that. Guys, I'll be around for a little bit this afternoon. Come and find me if you've got any questions. We've blasted through. Is there anything that anybody wants to ask before we're done?
And if you have a question, there's a mic in the middle.
Yeah, there's a microphone.
Name and company, that'd be great.
No, they're all a bit stunned. It's good.
Okay. We'll chuck one at you.
Go for it.
If we return to work tomorrow and we've got a small pot of money, how would we spend it so that we can actually implement some of the things that you've put up there in building resilience?
Yeah. I believe and I know that you can't rely on individual resilience. Resilient individuals don't need the help. Those that need to practice will practice. Those that have a resilience failure will have a resilience failure. You can't rely on the individual. It's too much of a variable in the equation. The organisation is a much smarter place to build resilience. If you only had a finite amount of money, I would always spend it on the leadership in the organisation. The closer to the staff, the more money I would spend on developing insight, skills-based programs, getting them into the room. One of the programs we do for a client is about mental health awareness for managers, because if there's 100 staff, you're going to have 20 of those that at some point may or may not experience mental illness or psychological injury. That management piece is the critical stuff. Don't worry about the CEO. Worry about the guys that touch and work with staff every day. When I say guys, I mean guys and girls. The reality for me is the more investment we have in leaders, it makes it easier. And this is the critical thing, and I'll leave you with this thought. That question about stuff means I'm okay or stuff means I'm not okay, the critical obligation of a manager is to be able to ask the question and hear the answer. So if we don't train managers to say, hey, are you okay? And hear somebody say, I'm not okay, then we won't advance what's going on in terms of reduction in psychological injury, increase in early intervention. This is the critical bit of resilience. Get managers understanding who they are and knowing how to talk to people about their issues. There you go. Thank you, guys.